you for joining us at Unsafe Art for Art Talk. I'm Terry Talty.
And I'm Stuart Bremner.
Art Talk is where we talk with artists and critical thinkers about the function of art in contemporary life.
More information about Art Talk can be found at unsafeart.com.
Today I'll talk with Eric Abraham, an artist who makes three-dimensional drawings and ceramic sculpture. Eric was born in the 40s in New York City. Both his parents were WPA artists. While he was growing up, they moved around the Western United States. He currently lives in Kansas, in an old Chevrolet dealership where he has a studio and the Flying Pig Gallery. For many years, Eric had his studio in Denver on South Santa Fe Drive. Before that, he taught at Somervale Art Workshop after receiving an MFA from the University of Nebraska and teaching at Kansas State University. I'd like to get an answer to the question I ask everyone. What is the purpose of art today? But it's a hard question for working artists to answer, so I ask them to project themselves into the future and look back. If you're looking back from 20 years in the future, what would you say has been the function of art, or what's the purpose of art in society in 2011?
That's difficult to say. Now, I could talk about purpose of art in 1830 or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, that's...
The purpose of art then was actually to be historical. It was to record things when they didn't have cameras. When the camera came, it actually freed the artist to do whatever he wanted to. You know, the Impressionists, Cubists, those didn't look like real things that you see out there. In 2011, what I see of art is going like future shock, you know. It's going fast, you know. Mm-hmm. Just like computers, it's, you know, you look at something and it's already outdated.
Mm, by the minute you look at it, it's outdated.
Yeah, by the time it gets to the gallery or the museum, it's history, you know. It's really history. The art no longer has to record actual visual happenings. Mm-hmm. Like you don't go out, you know, an artist doesn't go out and record, draw a auto accident or the president giving a speech or whatever. So art doesn't have a function in this world as it used to, you know, as recording things. Mm-hmm. It's been free, but a lot of artists know what to do with it, you know. It's freedom, you know. It's like with most freedoms, we're free, I think we do have a little anarchistic tendencies sometimes.
Do you think that this freedom, when we're talking, you know, since the photography became an easy way to record, that art changed to this free-for-all of artists can do anything? Are artists trying to depict something that we can't see just in a recording?
I think artists are trying to depict something that's happening in their minds more, in their imaginations.
Okay.
I'd really use the word imagination rather than in their mind, because that could be, there's all kinds of things that happen in one's mind, you know, or the insane, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Because imagination indicates that you're thinking and you're evaluating and you're thinking when things are going around in your mind and they come out into your hand somehow, you know.
Okay. And so then is that in a way translating the subconscious that we can't...
I'd say there's some subconscious. Yeah, I do. When I'm working, I don't do drawings to the clay work. I'll throw a series of forms or maybe roll out things and sort of the clay dictates to me what happens. It tells me what it wants to do. Mm-hmm. And like the last group I did last spring, I did a series of forms for cups, and they were upside down. I trimmed them. And they kept saying they didn't want to turn the other way around. So I made candle holders out of them. And they had wires coming up with a little candle holder thing. I threw some pieces to hold the candle and so forth. And that was a total surprise to me. And then someone turned into like lidded jars with wires going up from the lid to the little thing with a cage with a flying sheep in it and so forth. And I mean, the whole series is totally... amazed me, you know.
You said that about glaze you used. It came out really red. These pigs came out bright, double.
Well, I dipped in the wrong. I dipped in a red luster instead of a pink luster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, you know, I didn't even notice it until after they were fired.
Because there's a separation there.
Yeah, this is what I'm having trouble with right now. The clay is, you make the piece, it has to dry, go through the firing, and you have to be able to kiln load, comes out, and then you have to decorate it. You know, that used to be a dirty word when I was going to school. And then it comes out, and you put the gold and so forth on, and then some of them are assembled like the candle holders,
mm-hmm.
and then by that time, two or three months have gone past.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces I'm working on right now, I did last, this is February, almost February, in January, I did it last October.
Yeah, so yeah. There's a big separation of what...
Losing the trend of the idea, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like the three-dimensional drawings much better, you know. And the drawings now, I do preliminaries for those.
So a small sketch?
I do a small sketch to work out, and then I start into the illustration board, and then it tells me sometimes what it wants to do something besides what's in my drawing. As far as art, what the function of art is, it has many functions, I think. There's you can go from outright illustration, you know, illustrating the car accident, or the president giving a speech.
Uh-huh. Or these photographs, these kind of old photographs from your life.
Right, yeah, the drawings are from the old photographs. They're usually autobiographical.
Uh-huh.
And or something I've had around for a long time, and then it evolved into this drawing.
Uh-huh.
And as I say, it tells me sometimes what it wants to do.
Right, and then so you're saying the function, it could be this recording. So is there some value to this idea of recording?
I think so. Yeah, I think most art, even except maybe for illustrating an article or story or something like that.
Right.
If it's an artist coming from, the artist himself is somehow either recording something that happened in his life, or his subconscious, or his imagination, or if it's not objective, it's illustrating the colors that he somehow has an affinity to, and it's a recording of something that's personal to him or her.
Do you think that's a valid function? That's something we're going to say later is a valid function of art?
I think so. I definitely think so. Yeah, I go to the gallery, I see a lot of very personal work, you know, that I don't necessarily understand sometimes, and I have never gotten to the point where I really say, I don't really like this, I think this should be taken out and put in the trash out. I wouldn't say that, because it's somebody else's personal statement, and you wouldn't do that, you know, that's rather rude to do that, you know, but if I don't care for it, I usually pass by and let somebody else appreciate it, you know. It's one of their basic things that makes us human. And this last spring, I read a very interesting anthropological book. Her premise was that art is what made us human. It separates us from the animals. We're the only animal that consciously creates art.
Hmm.
And she contended that we had art before we had language even. And she refers to it as making special. It's like a politician gives a speech and he's ranting and raving. He doesn't talk like that normally.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, the president, he was emphasizing and emoting and so forth when he's making his points.
Mm-hmm. So art's a special statement.
Yeah, art is a special statement, yeah. Uh-huh. And music, art, visual art, play acting, the Romans, the Greeks, probably beyond the Greeks have play acting, yeah. To divorce it from the world, make it special, to create some kind of a story or a point or something or other. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like asking the question, would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, it's not, would you like, how much water do you want to glass, y'all?
Do you have any idea what the specialness is?
It's an ape making marks on a paper. Oh, it's a friend might have a painting that's done by an elephant. Same difference, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Actually sort of nice, an objective painting. Elephant was trained to put a brush in his hat, put the paint, go on a piece of paper. Well, a lot of art students are trained to take a brush in their hand and make braided marks on a piece of paper, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we can take, we have a, make a red mark on a piece of paper. And, no, we don't like that red mark. We've got to put some blue over it. And we're going to make it purple, yeah. And no, we don't want that. We've got to put some diagonal across on yellow, yeah. And we constantly think that. pretty much, you know, to a certain extent, you know, sometimes, mm-hmm. sometimes it's not thought out, I've put the yellow, brush in the yellow and make some yellow mark, but it just, it's a process that, you know, it's constant, it's, you can evaluate what you do. The elephant, I don't think, evaluates what he does.
Okay.
You know, or the gorilla, you know.
So, yeah, is this it's, making
we,
the special...
We have communication with the piece, you know, we have a, we can look at our what we did and say, I like this, I don't like this, I'm going to change it, I'm going to water it up, throw it away, or I'm going to frame it and put it in the next, you know, Whitney Museum show, you know.
Mm-hmm. So it's, we evaluate whether it has...
Yes, we can evaluate.
It's communicating, whether it's doing its special communicating.
Right. Yeah, it's communicating somehow, yeah. Uh-huh. And then, of course, the viewer has a responsibility to, the, you know, to react to that piece, and there, a lot of people come and say, boy, my 2-year-old kid could do better than that. But the 2-year-old kid still hasn't learned to evaluate yet. But he may be saying, I like this or I don't like this, you know. Ruth's grandkid, she's 3.
Oh, good. She does.
And she told her mother, these are the colors of the song I sang. So she's evaluating. At 3 years old, this girl is evaluating what she's doing, and I think she's consciously putting the colors, what colors she wants. She sees them in the jar, and she puts the yellow down, and she puts the brush, she puts some red down beside it, and then she gets some blue, puts some squiggles up here, you know, and that's the colors of the song she sang.
The colors of the song she sang.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So can you be that specific that when you are making these flying pigs?
A different way, maybe. The drawings for the three-dimensional drawings.
Yeah, the three-dimensional drawing series.
Yeah, well, see, I started out with the picture, with a photograph that I'm working from.
Uh-huh.
And then I usually put some kind of frame thing around it, and there's some, you know, it just sort of builds. And sometimes I go through several pages of sketchbook, uh-huh. you know, trying to build this, you know, up, you know. And sometimes I discard, you know, put that back in the file, uh-huh. in the album, and get another picture. Because it just won't resolve itself. It just won't, you know. And then maybe another drawing or so, I'll come back to that one drawing, and something will spark and say, hey, this works, you know, uh-huh. this thing works out here like that, you know.
So, yeah, when a form reconciles itself to the photograph, or the drawing of the photograph, do you have any explanation? Is it a conscious explanation that you have why it resolved?
It just feels right. It feels right. You know, it just feels like this is the way it should be. I had one down in Florida. I'd done a drawing from this before, and it's me and my on our front porch of our house with my toys. Uh-huh. I'm 5 years old, and this the first one resolved itself very nicely.
Okay, and then the second one.
I started out with I probably did 4 or 5 pages of drawings in the sketchbook, and it just didn't work out. But I started doing it. I did the drawing of me on the porch, and that has some dimension to it. You know, the row of toys are cut out, and I'm in behind there, and then the house is behind me. The porch thing comes out, and so on. And then this is, it's maybe 2 or 3, almost 2 inches deep, you know, physically. Uh-huh. You know. And then it just didn't want, I did this, and I tore, next day I tore it off, and did something else, and finally, there's another border around it, I think, and then a sort of like a quarter moon shape comes up,
okay.
like a ship almost. Then there's a row of toys. Then there's part of one of the vignettes in it, me standing there while my father's working on the kite that we're going to fly.
Oh, okay.
And so on the top of the ship thing, I put the mountains or the hills behind Ray Seeker Park in Los Angeles. And then my father's there, he's real tall and thin. And he's in the drawing, he's probably 4 inches, 5 inches tall. And I'm there, and there's a wire going up to this little kite with a little, I use a twisty for the tail.
Okay.
You know, I painted it, you know, it's all twisted up. But it came together very, it's about like, maybe 12, 14 inches wide, by about maybe 18 inches high, 20 inches high, something like that.
Okay.
Quite a few people have told me that they think the backs are just as interesting as the front.
The backs of the drawing.
Yeah, the backs, because if you turn around, it's all this pasting and cutting and little tabs and things to make the
everything fit together.
Fit together, yeah.
So you're trying to kind of bring these experiences?
A grab shot, you know, my mother took the picture, or I took the picture, or somebody took the picture, you know. It's a candid shot.
A snapshot.
Snapshot, yeah. take it down to the drugstore and you can get it back next week. And at that time, it came in a little 8 pictures, a little album.
Yeah.
And you can tear it out, put it in your photo album. These are fairly autobiographical, but I think enough people have similar experiences that they can relate to these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when they were kids, most people flew on a kite. They had a daddy. They lived in a house with a porch. You know, they had stuffed animals. Or they grew older. They had a car, or they had a girlfriend or boyfriend, and a house. You know, they have all these accoutrements that are in these pictures. You know.
And what are you doing with them when you pop them out into these three dimensions? Like,
oh, they're hanging on the wall.
Okay, so they hang on the wall.
Yeah, people suggested that I put a plexiglass box over them, but that's framed from separation from the wall too. You know, I want it to be on the wall over there. I want it to just be itself, and I don't want to have a frame around it. You know, and this line around it, even with the plexiglass box, I'm going to put a line around it, a rectangular line around it.
And you don't like that?
I don't like that. If I sell one, of course I'm concerned with its longevity. You know, at least I have one I did back in, I think I did in 1975, December 75. I did two of these at that sitting in this guy's house near Marshall, Virginia. And then I still have one, the first I did. The second one, prayed to a guy and it burned up.
Oh.
What was his name? The paper man here in Denver.
Ray?
Yeah, Ray. Yeah, Ray Tomaso.
Okay.
Yeah, it burned up in his house.
When his house burned down?
Yeah. And that was a nice piece because it had a big, like, Athena in it.
Uh-huh.
The Athena was maybe, it's like in a mirror. Like, you look in the mirror and you see, instead of yourself, you see Athena. The other was a sort of circle, and then it had a girl and then a boy with a newspaper. My bicycle with a newspaper bag on it, which is actually my uncle and the other, my aunt.
And but that one is still out.
That one I still have it. And it was in my studio here in Denver for 16 years. And it's faded, it's yellowed. That was the last ones I did until I started doing this residency in the Raymer in Lynchburg. And I spent a month there and did about 10 or 12 drawings. I can see the progression. I can line up in chronological order. You know. You can see the progression.
And what's that changed about them?
They're tighter and they're more thought out. They're more mature, maybe more complete.
Uh-huh. And if they're successful, what do you think? What makes?
Because I like them. Yeah. You know. Yeah. It's really success is a hard thing. You know, what's successful to one person is a failure to another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's people look at these things and says, "Boy, he sure lost it all. he's just stuck to clay." Yeah. You know.
Well, there's something really charming about them.
Yeah, I like, you know, there's some, it goes beyond the original photograph. It's, you know, I can take the photograph and a piece of, you know, rectangular paper, blow it up and do it, right, render it very nicely, mm-hmm. put it in a frame, and it'd be, what's the point? I've already got the photograph, but what's the point of doing it without something imaginative around it, without putting it into a fun environment?
And putting it makes it live again.
Yeah, it gives it a different life.
But do you think they're nostalgic? Is it just about nostalgia?
To me, there's probably a certain nostalgia to them. And the ones with the cars in them, I have a whole series of cars that I had. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of cars that I wish I'd had. Probably a good thing I didn't, but.
You mean you've done drawings of cars you wished you had?
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, one was a 1936 Ford convertible that was in Albuquerque for $650. And a week later, I joined the Air Force. I tried to figure out how I could buy that car on $78 a month airman basic pay. Didn't quite work out. And so instead, I bought a 1940 Packard convertible sedan for $65.
Well, tell me what the title of that car. The cord that you didn't buy.
I think it was. Well, I've done several with that cord in it. And the first one I did was an arch way. It was several layers, but the Vegas coming out like in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing there in my air basic uniform with a little thought balloon, it's got almost cartoon, and then that's floating that little cord. And it comes out, you know, like a little tablecloth coming out, mm-hmm. and it's just like I said just a few minutes ago, the I saw this 36 chord in the lot in Albuquerque, and there was $650. I tried to figure out how to pay it off at $78 a month for every basic pay.
Yeah.
The titles get very long on some of these.
And so that was the title of it.
That was the title, yeah, essentially. Yeah, that was the title. And I did one of the Bugatti also that I could have bought in Germany for $400. and Dan Tweed, I'm available on that.
And he bought the drawing.
He bought the drawing.
Not the Bugatti.
Yeah. Not the Bugatti. I don't know, whatever, the Bugatti.
So this is the kind of thing that's coming out of your imagination. How many years after you saw the Bugatti?
Yeah, I saw the Bugatti. It was 1959, I think it was.
Okay, so that's 50 years ago.
I just bought a Mercedes convertible for $500. So the Mercedes ran, the Bugatti didn't. And I think the guy that had it put it in a box and sent it home as household goods.
Huh. So it's not just a picture of a car, it's the whole concept it's a car that I wish I would have bought.
Yeah, yeah. And
I've thought about it for 50 years.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's, I have I did another one of the cord, and it was on a plate, it's a pencil drawing on porcelain.
Okay.
And there's a car at the top, it's got the top down, and there's a cowboy standing by that. And all of a sudden I realized that Tom Mix died in a 1936 or 37 Accord that actually didn't kill him. There's his special aluminum luggage that was in the back seat that came out and whacked him in the head and broke his neck. So that's in the Tom Mix Museum in Dewey, Oklahoma. Uh-huh. And a lot of people, a lot of people connect with the cars. I had three Model A's in my time, and I've done pictures of each one of them different ways. Uh-huh. And my first car was a 23 Model T Ford. I've done one that I like the best. I think it's a there's a little picture a circle in there with a camera iris mm-hmm. behind acetate, and then about a year later I put a light inside of it, and there's there's the Model T in black and white, just a pencil, and the car is one piece, the door is another piece. This door is open, it comes out sort of physically comes out, and then I'm stepping out of the car. I'm cut out, stepping out of the car. This is from a picture taken on October 10th, 1952, when I was 15 years old. And they'd hauled that Model T into the yard, end of a tow rope. And my father thought that was the biggest eyesore in town. He just went on and on. He just couldn't. I drove one of those things back in the 20s. That was a horrible car, blah, 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 blah. So I got a can of paint and black paint and painted it with a brush right over the rust and dirt. That didn't make any difference. I wanted to take the engine out, and I was going to have the kids push me around, to the garage, and I sort of look over the two before in the garage and pull the rotten engine out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which this engine, first of all, this engine weighed about 500 pounds. But of course, my father didn't say that. He just started screaming and yelling, and he went and gave me a black eye. And I got the engine out, by myself. And handled the engine out and took it apart, and I never did get it all back together. He bought me a Model A to get the Model T out of the yard.
So are these drawings going to last as long as these memories?
Yeah, I think so. I actually would like to switch over to do more of the drawings and the clay pieces, but I don't see myself getting out of clay.
Mm-hmm.
Because
what's the clay give you? What kind of special communication can you make with that that's different than the drawing?
And I still enjoy doing the clay things. Little funny little animals with the wings and the hats and the watches and so forth. They're sort of tongue-in-cheek and funny. And
is there something that you can do in clay that you can't do? I mean, is it more permanent
more tactile? Well, of course the clay is more permanent. I have done clay pieces where I've done parts of it with, I leave an area that's just unglazed with just the porcelain. And it's sanded down and so forth. So it's a nice drawing surface. And I do draw with a pencil and colored pencils on that.
Mm.
And of course, they're sprayed and so forth.
So they'll still last.
Yeah, so they'll last.
Even your ceramics are really actually, they're not that permanent. There's always stuff sticking out breakable, scary.
Yeah, much of it gets broken, in the fire. Everywhere from the second I make it to when you hang it on the wall, there's something that's going to happen to it. Yeah, it does. Yeah,
But yeah, you've always made stuff that's kind of precarious that way.
Yeah, it's they're always on sort of on the edge. Yeah.
Yeah.
If not, you know, maybe not on the cutting edge of aesthetics for Art News, but it's on the cutting. It's on the edge of the cliff, falling over the cliff, or not. You know.
Yeah. Is there something that you've done with that danger that this is something that's potentially on its way out, almost to lose it?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's fragile.
I keep threatening to get out of clay, but I probably won't, because it's still fun to make the pieces. But I'd like to get more into the feeling of the drawings, yeah. And I did do one drawing in clay. And people ask me, are those maquettes for clay pieces? No, they're really not. I did do one piece as for that first session at the Raymer, and then I did a clay piece from it. That's the only one I've done a clay piece from.
Yeah.
And I had that up in I think the following year, I had that up in Salida at the clay plant. And that sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so did you think the clay version of the drawing was successful?
I don't think the clay piece was as successful as the... But I had both of them together and the clay was sold.
Because there is something with that.
The pencil, the mark of the drawing, yeah. Mm-hmm. When you draw the instrument across the paper, it leaves a mark.
Yeah,
drawing he has.
Yeah. Well, there is something to be said for that, because it does maybe seem as a little.
Well, I've always drawn. My mother gave me pencil and paper when I was probably one or two years. As soon as I could hold a pencil in my hand,
mm-hmm.
She said the first thing I drew was car, and she also told me once that the first word I ever said was car.
And you're still drawing. So did you always think you were going to be an artist, that this was just...
Well, I never thought about it much until I got out into the service. And one time I wanted to be a geography. Mm-hmm. A librarian was another thing that I thought of pointing it to. I could make more money as a librarian.
Not many things that you could make more money as a librarian than probably as an artist, yeah.
But anyway, the... She always gave me pencil, paper, paints. We did projects together. I have a puppet that she made when I was 4 years old. And I remember helping her. The feet are like lead weights, sort of egg-shaped lead weights, about inch and a half long, about maybe 3/4 inch wide. I don't know where they were from, but they're in the papier-mâché, and they got the toes. And I remember I worked on those a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the puppet.
Hmm. And your parents were both artists.
Yes, yeah, they were. Well, they went to the Wisconsin Art Institute, and then she married a guy who was a lithographer, and they went to New York, and he's at a studio in the village.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would leave her in the city to support him, while he went out to Woodstock to study lithography with a guy named Bolton Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And that went over like the proverbial lead balloon.
Mm-hmm. And she met your
and then dad. She got on WPA, and he was on WPA. He went to Cincinnati Art Academy, John Heron, and took private lessons under Elmer Taffelinger, and then went to National Academy of Design. He was doing chalk talks in the public school. He's got on WPA. That's how they met.
Oh.
And they did something weird and had a kid.
You.
Which wasn't in either of them's scheme of things. And she did adjust and did things with me. My father gave me food, shelter, and clothing, and a hard time.
So do you think from their life that you valued this idea of that you express yourself?
Art was fun to do. I gave you a big bottle of plastiline clay that I go out the driveway and play with.
But did you think there was going to be meaning in what you were doing from this? Did you get that from your parents? Or
meaningful?
Yeah, that what you were doing was meaningful?
Not really. It was mostly fun. I had a great time doing it. And I used to get in trouble in school drawing pictures in English class and so forth. And I drew all through school. I did more drawing in school than I did, anything else.
Than math.
Yeah. And actually, my father turned out when I was got down to I was going to get an F in something, like spelling. He coached me in spelling, for instance.
Uh-huh.
And I went from F's to A's in spelling. He was very good at that. He was very good.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's good.
But that was few and far between.
Well, so where did you, you know, get the idea that you should be somebody that, that could make this special communication?
I think when I was in the Air Force, I thought, well, I certainly don't want to stay in the Air Force. And I couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do, so I started running around to different art schools. You know, and my mother, and we'd lived in southern Missouri when I was about 8 to 11 years old. Of course, yeah, that's, you know, you always want to go back to when you're 10 years old. Mm. And so I wanted to go back to the southern Missouri and raise chickens.
Mm.
And of course, first time I went back there, I realized that wasn't the place for me. You know, you know, 10, 12, 11 years later, you know, it totally changed. And still, I go through there. I have some friends I stayed with, a fellow I went to school with in Birch Street, I stayed with. And this is totally, it's totally different, you know. And, but the...
So you went back to Kansas City.
I did go to Kansas City because that's where I, you know, and my mother had gone there. She always used to tell me stories about the Institute. And she was a sculpture person.
Oh.
When she went to Kansas City, she essentially ran away from home. She stayed with an uncle who was going to Baptist Seminary. And he told her after a couple of months, he said, first of all, you're going to get a job. And then, you know, and she knew about the Institute. And he said, there's a famous sculptor coming to the Art Institute is going to give a lecture. And you're going to go up there and you're going to show him your sketchbook. And she was too shy. She said, I don't know. So he took her sketchbook, took her to the lecture, put the sketchbook in her head, shoved her up there. And the guy looked through the sketchbook, page by page. This is her story that she told me about maybe two months before she died.
Oh.
And he said, young lady, I want you to draw, draw, draw. And later on, when she was in sculpture, the same guy came up, and the sculpture class helped him do a maquette, fairly beside maquette for the piece he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Mount Rushmore, you'll see that maquette.
It was...
That's a Borgo. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so it was...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was So when I went there next time, I wound up, looking, went down to this little tin shed down to the lower left of the Richter Center.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there, and there's all kinds of maquettes and drawings and so forth. So one of those is the one she worked on.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And they were related.
So school? At school? Are you thinking, do your parents were why you decided to should be an artist?
My father always had a real job. He never did make a living off his art.
Uh-huh.
Except he always used to incorporate... At the highway department in Santa Fe, he was an artist draftsman. A sort of position, he was good at making up positions for himself. Because he hired on as a draftsman. And then he did, they discovered he could do drawings, so he did illustrations for their brochures and booklets, mm-hmm. and so forth and so on. They put the interstate through Albuquerque. He did a railroad model of the interstates all going through Albuquerque, the buildings and the cars and the trucks and... I have a fun cartoon of him with this whole crew there. It's just hilarious.
A cartoon.
One of the other guys did.
Drew a cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is. Everybody else looks pretty much straight, but my father has this sort of a long pointy. He had a little Van Dyke beard at the time.
Okay.
He always had that very often. Always had a mustache, but he had a little beard, and it comes down to the point. And he's sitting there, going, he's saying, "Oh, fiddlesticks." and one guy saying this is the way it should be, the other guy saying this is the way it should be, and my father saying, "Oh, fiddlesticks," which is one of the favorite words. But anyway, when I started going to art school, my father was very, very excited about it. And my father sent me $12 a week.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging.
Yeah, yeah. I stay away from home most of the time.
Well, thanks for talking to us about this stuff.
Yeah.
I think we've got a better idea of what you think the function of art is. And we'll ask you in 20 years what you think and see if it's the same.
I'm sure it'll be pretty much the same.